Welcome to another episode of Wildcast. I'm your producer and host, Eric Hunt. Sitting in the guest chair today is our usual host, the Penn College Assistant Director of Athletics, Matt Bleiermeyer. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, Eric. It is weird being on this side of the mic, but we're going to have some fun.
Yeah, we are. In your Assistant Director of Athletic roles, you also oversee communications, compliance, and finance for the department. You're the second longest continually tenured member of this department. Only Chris Howard, our baseball coach, is longer. And you celebrated your 10-year anniversary in the fall of 24 this year.
Yes.
You joked with me this morning you were the walking Penn College Athletics Encyclopedia.
Yes. Yeah, so I think to break it down, let's just start with communications. What is communications? What do? What are you responsible for? Communications is anything that you see on the website, on social media, anything that's video, anything that's photography, anything that is written about Penn College athletics is the responsibility of the communication. And so 10 years ago, it was a one-person shop. Throughout some time, you know, there was some help added with full-time coaches assisting with part of the communications portfolio. And then 2 years ago, we were able to get you, Eric, initially on a grant and then continuing basis. Another big thing of communications that people may not know is, in addition to having to be an expert and a good writer, a good photographer, a good video producer, now a good podcast host producer, creating social media graphics, engaging content, is you have to be a statistical expert on every sport that your institution offers. And so you'll see me and now Eric sitting in the press box at soccer with a computer in front of us, running a webcast and statting a game. We have to be experts on all of our sports. We have to know statistically what each play is. Is that an assist? Who scored the goal? Turnover, probably some of the more challenging is in baseball and softball. Is that an error? Because sometimes that is a judgment, a statistical decision. It's a one-person public relations and marketing office, in addition to being the head statistician, and now having Eric on board has certainly helped reduce the load and has given us the ability to really showcase our coaches and student athletes on social media with a lot of great graphics that we're doing. Then certainly this Wildcast, a podcast, is another great place for content to, again, showcase our student athletes and our coaches. The other part of my position is compliance. It's very dry. It's really making sure that we are complying with NCAA and United East policies, and we do that in several ways. We educate our coaches and student athletes on policy changes. We remind them of certain policies and rules. There's an eligibility piece to it where I check our student athletes' eligibility each semester. And then the finance piece is, it's probably the most challenging, because if you get it wrong, it has a incredible impact on what we can do as an institution. And so over the last 10 years, I've been able to develop a certain system in place where I think we're pretty good with budgeting. And, you know, we strive to give all of our programs everything they need. So that's kind of a analysis or a recap of kind of what I do on a day-to-day basis. I mean, so it all kind of keeps me on my feet, and it's certainly challenging at times, but also rewarding.
That is a lot on your plate on a daily basis, and I'm sure not everyone jumps to that kind of career process. You got your start working at a newspaper, mm-hmm. right? How does someone in your position now go from working at a newspaper to all the things that you have to maintain on a daily basis to make sure that the Penn College Athletics is functioning?
Yeah, so after I graduated from Millersville in, I'm not going to say the year, with a communications degree.
It's 2005, by the way.
It is 2005. Thank you so much. Thanks, Eric. Were you even born then?
You're like, yeah, six. I was nine, so probably, what's that, third grade?
You're in third grade as I'm walking across the stage, you know, thanks. I appreciate that. After I graduated Millersville, position at Lancaster Intelligence Journal opened. So at the time, again, newspaper industry has completely changed since then. Lancaster was one of the bigger markets, not only in the state, but in the country. We had three newspapers. We had the Sunday News, we had the Intel, which was the morning, we had the New Era, which was the evening paper. So I did that for 6 years. And being a newspaper reporter, while it's fun, it's probably some of the most rewarding things I've been able to do is, you know, be a champion for Scholastic high school student athletes and coaches. And, you know, you have your gamers, which you go out and you cover games. But my favorite part was writing features. And sometimes one of my biggest things that I did that I'm very proud of was a four-part series, an investigation piece on the fiscal impact of high school athletics on their district's budget and then the benefits of that. And I partnered with Ed Groover, who is a colleague of mine and quite honestly someone I looked up to as a writer. That was one of my proudest moments. One of the coolest moments was our editor was he covered the Eagles and he wasn't able to make one of the games. And I remember him calling me and saying, "Hey, do you want to cover the Eagles game this weekend? They were playing the 49ers and I'm a huge Eagles fan." I was like, "Absolutely." And I went there with another friend of mine. His name's Gordy Jones, another one of my early people I looked up to. And it was really neat because he was the beat reporter for the Allentown Mirror for a while for the Eagles. So that was neat. And so all of that stuff was great, but I wasn't able to really be comfortable financially. And I started getting into the college side of it because my brother was the sports information director at Franklin Marshall College in Lancaster. And so I guess just like many of our head coaches where they had to grind it out before they reached where they wanted to go, I was doing the same. I was, you know, the newspaper, you work 5:30 p.m. to 1 a.m. So it's not even a second shift. It's worse than second shift. And then in the mornings or the afternoons before I had to go in the evening, I would go to Franklin and Marshall and they had a coordinator position that was funded by their proceeds from their online store, which was a great use of that. So I was able to get my foot in the door that way. So through that, I was learning the other parts of sports information, which was, you know, the website and statting and all those things. And then in 2012, a position at Maine Maritime opened. The athletic director at Maine Maritime, his name was Steve Peed. He was the director of athletic communications at Franklin and Marshall when I was there. And so Steve had gone to Maine Maritime and he called me and said, "Hey, you know, I have a spot. I know it's a big move, but if you want to apply for it, I think you'll have a good chance at getting it." And so when someone tells you that, you're like, okay. And so big decision time. I'm in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Again, I'm grinding, you know, trying to make ends meet. And now this opportunity presents itself to do something new, to do something different, to be in an administrative role at the collegiate level, but it's 12 hours away. And so, I thought about it for a while, and probably the hardest choice up until that point I had to make was to take it or not. And I did. Now I'm, you know, 28 years old, being an assistant athletic director after, you know, basically being a sports writer. And, you know, you have imposter syndrome for sure. You're trying to figure it out as you go. It was fantastic that I had Steve literally right next door. It was good having, you know, someone I had known for 5 or 6 years in the office next door as my boss.
Yeah. So looking through your bio to try and pull questions, like we have very similar startups. I'm curious to hear how you knew that this career path was the one that you wanted to take, and when did that occur?
Yeah, so I think I've always loved sports. When I was in college, I was coaching football at my high school. I first started at the eighth grade level and went up to the high school level. For me, I think without sports, particularly football in my case, I don't know that I would be where I was. I was a wayward child. I got.
We're also going to get into that too.
Oh, good. Yeah, I was a wayward child, and I think the discipline and the teammates and the coaches as father figures that I was able to experience participating in sports helped shape me to who I am. So I wanted to give back in any way possible to give future kids the experience I had. And I enjoy sports. I enjoy watching the growth and the maturation of students from, you know, when they come in as freshmen to when they leave as seniors. And I truly believe that I've never worked a day in my life, because even as hard as it's been, there's been some very challenging times, but I've never once woken up and just didn't want to go to work because I just wait so much.
So you get the call to go to Maine Maritime. How long did you mull that over and think about that?
I knew I was at least going to go up there and interview. So I flew up to Bangor and then drove out to Castine and just interviewed. A few days later, you know, get the call that the position's mine. And, you know, like most people, Steve was like, you know, take the weekend to think about it. And I said, thank you. I'm going to need the weekend to think about it. And, you know, luckily I was surrounded by my parents and my brother, he's my twin brother. And so he's also my best friend, and able to bounce, talk to him about those things. And I made a decision to make the move, and it wasn't easy. Quite frankly, it was scary for a little bit, because you're just so uncomfortable, but you just have to embrace that uncomfortableness and dive into it and figure it out.
So looking through what you have accomplished, you were in sports information world when social media and video and all this stuff presently now is so big. You grew up with that, trying to implement that. How are you able to do that at every stop?
Yeah, I think it's so that the sports information or athletic communication role, let's say 15 years ago, was really just statting and writing press releases. And once social media came, it became more than that. And once it became easier to do video, it became more than that. And so I'd say my first time really leaning in to what the modern consumer wanted as their content was probably at the newspaper. So one of my beats was lacrosse, and I started a blog just as more of a, you know, let's empty the notebook and put stuff out on the blog that you can't get into the newspaper. Then eventually I started, because my background was in communication, specifically broadcasting. I had a video editing background. I started using video on my blog and you know, getting some new media. It sounds funny now saying that was new media, but back then it was new media. And then I think, you know, going to Maine Maritime, really leaning into Facebook, Twitter, and really just those two to begin with. It wasn't until, I'd say, maybe 7 years ago where Instagram kind of gave Twitter and Facebook a run for its money. So it's like, okay, we have to start, you know, using this platform as well. And so I think as we've evolved as consumers, us as the content creators need to evolve with it. And so for me, that meant smaller press releases, more social media. I like to write. I love to write. But that's not where what the consumers want. And so a shift was made to do more social media and more video. And then certainly when you came on board 2 years ago, there was finally another person that had the skill sets in order to do those things. And so we've really leaned in specifically in the last 2 years with video and social media posts and certainly this podcast, because this is another thing that consumers want as another way to deliver the content.
Mm-hmm. So you spend 2 years at Maine Maritime, and then position at Penn College opens up. What's kind of going through your thought process there? Obviously, Penn College is a lot closer to home. What is that transition like for you in 2014?
Yeah, the position, the title was exactly what my title was at Maine Maritime. The job description was very similar. And living in Maine is tough when you're by yourself. Summers and spring are great. You know, we talked to Coach Hensley about this. The winters are tough. They're long. They're cold. They're dark. And, you know, opportunity arose to get back to Pennsylvania. And I applied for that position.
And we talked earlier with Scott Kenner, our athletic director. You come in the middle of Penn College transitioning to NCAA, and you had to be hands-on in that aspect, trying to help the department get to the finish line and become NCAA certified. Just what was that process like for you? Was that kind of something that you saw coming on your interview?
No, I had no idea what I was getting into as far as that's concerned. So Maine Maritime is a Division III institution. I'd been D3 for 30 years. And so kind of the things I dealt with there was an already established Division III institution with the facilities in place, you know, strength conditioning, full-time head coaches, policy procedures, all those things were in place. College complete opposite. You come in, we're in our probationary year. We've been 14, 15, and there are two full-time head coaches, me, Scott, and a secretary. And not prepared at all for what you have to do to get a institution, to get a department to through the NCAA process. And I mean, it was a lot, and I think the best way that we dove into it, once, you know, obviously Scott had already been here and was working on those things, and the last thing you want to do is mess up, but you also don't want paralysis by analysis. So it was just really give it your best and hope that that's what they're looking for. And thankfully for us, it was. It was a lot of meetings with people around campus. It was a lot of writing reports. It was a lot of checks and balances. I think the key to that was is changing the tone of that, not, whoa, there's a lot to do here. It's, whoa, there's a lot to do here. And I think once you change that, just that tone, you can get yourself excited, because there's nothing more thrilling, scary, and rewarding than a blank canvas that you're able to put your own brushstrokes on. And that's how I looked at that process. And I know that's how Scott had looked at it too. And that's the healthiest, at least from my vantage point, that's the healthiest and most effective way to look at a process like that.
Yeah. And definitely you can see a lot of your fingerprints and footprints on a lot of the projects that have been going on this last 10, almost 11 years now. Mm-hmm. So what did you tackle first when you first got on campus?
The first thing for me, when you look at it from the communications point, was I wanted to have more of a social media presence. I immediately wanted webcasting, and I wanted two other big things was redesign the website and get a new logo. The logo we had when I got here was a 2D logo, one side of a Wildcat head. And it was, for me, I knew that that was, while it seemed surface level, for a branding perspective, a logo goes so far. And, you know, there's no point in redesigning a website if you're going to redo your logo. And so it was logo, website, social media, webcasting. Was able to, the things that I could control immediately were the webcasting and the social media. And so our social media became more prevalent, and we started webcasting. And both of those, I think, were beneficial to get our content and our name out there. So they were the things initially from a communication standpoint that I wanted to tackle. The other things with, you know, with the other parts of my position, you kind of tackle those as they come up. When you look at, you know, budgeting, you really don't know what you don't know until you go through your first budget cycle. And that first budget cycle was eye-opening. And so you adjust and you adapt accordingly, and you tweak, you know, year after year on those things, same with compliance.
So we get through the NCAA provisional period, we're fully NCAA eligible, and then Scott ends up leaving, takes another job at Madonna. A new athletic director comes in. What was that process like, especially for you being kind of the higher up administrator at that time?
Scott leaving, it was unexpected in that, you know, we still had another year, but Scott and I were always close. I knew there was another thing calling him, and that was a higher level, which Madonna NAIA was. And so when Scott left and we still had some time left in the NCAA process, it falls to me as the, you know, the person that knows everything that's going on. And so John Vanderveer comes in, and you know, credit to John, I'm going to lean on you for this, because there's a year left. By the time you get John up to speed, the year's over. And so he really trusted at that time that I was able to do the things we needed to do. And a lot of that was credit to Scott, where we already had stuff in place where it was really just don't mess up. And we didn't. And so we got through that final year, and we're full NCAA members. And that kind of, that ended kind of, I think, one chapter in the journey of Penn College Athletics was getting to that point. There was a 5-year plan to get us to that point. And, you know, during that final year, we had started working on another 5-year strategic plan. And that's one thing that this institution does, I think, really well, is like, let's not do this haphazardly. let's be strategic, let's put it on paper. Doesn't mean we have to stick to it, but let's at least have a compass of where we want to go. And so that took us to another 5-year plan, which was, I think, really facilities enhancement and enhancements in many ways. That's, you know, we ended up getting the logo, which was probably one of the favorite process. I was able to run that logo committee. I had worked with a guy named Sky Dillon at Maine Maritime, and he ended up being the leading bidder to get this job, and couldn't be more happy with the process. Was so fun. I don't know if I've shown you, if you look back, have I shown you like some of the early renderings?
Yeah,
it's so neat to look at, you know, some of his sketches and go, man, what if we would have chased that? What if we wouldn't go down this road? We could have potentially had a wildcat that looked like a robot with like a big claw. And, you know, I think obviously we got it right. And that was, I think, probably the first big thing we did after the NCAA process was that logo. And then that kind of shifted everything because we started rebranding and we were getting new facilities and we were able to put this logo that we were proud of now, not only in our facilities, but on our uniforms and on our apparel.
Then school is becoming well known and becoming more recognized with student athletes and prospective student athletes. And then COVID hits, right? And so now there's this big pause. And then out of that big pause, you get elevated to interim athletic director. How much have you learned in that year, in that time period?
Yeah, that was so March 2020 was COVID. We had shut down sports that spring. John had left that summer. And so it's summer going into the fall of 21. COVID is still going. Me along with Brittany are elevated to interim directors of athletics. And gosh, I can't begin to tell you how that was the most challenging professional year of my life. Not only are you now in a position of change and authority, you're still doing your other job, which, as we mentioned, that those positions by themselves are heavy. It's communications, it's compliance, it's the finance piece to it. excuse me. We're also in the middle of a big renovation project. Our office suites were getting renovated at the time. So we have this construction project going on. We have a pandemic going on. And you're in a position that with, let's just take away a pandemic. Being an athletic director, and especially when you're doing those other things, is challenging enough. And then you throw in a pandemic on top of it where, you know, you're testing, you're coming up with COVID protocols, there's masking. It was challenging. No one had a playbook for it, obviously. And I think, again, it's kind of similar to when you're going through the NCAA process is you have to look at the challenge as something exciting to do. And you have to be comfortable and confident enough to ask questions and admit you don't know certain things. And then the biggest thing, I think, is being decisive doesn't mean making a decision immediately. Being decisive for me means making a decision with all the information you have in however long you're allowed to make that decision. So if you ask me a question, but you don't need an answer right away, I don't need to give you an answer right away. Let's think about it. Let's look at the data. Let's look at some of the things that go into play and let's make the decision and let's pull other people in. And so I think that was kind of how I approached it. Obviously, having a co-interim was beneficial. Brittany and I spent a lot of time together. There's really only two people, you know, that we knew of that were experiencing the same thing that we were, because she was also wearing the hat of the head women's basketball coach. And no one could really understand what we were going through except for us. And so the benefit of that is having somebody to bounce things off of. And whether that's personal or professional, just having someone else that understands what you're going through and understands that maybe if you didn't have the best day, there was probably a reason for it, because I went to bed every night exhausted. It was definitely the most challenging. And there are other things at play that factored into some of the challenges that were unnecessary. And so it's kind of, you know, trying to ignore those things and just keeping the main thing the main thing. And for me, it's always been this focus. What's in the best interest of our student athletes, and how can I help our coaches give our student athletes the best experience they can have? And so for me, I felt as long as I was doing those things, I was doing the right things, and I tried to ignore the noise. But it was a challenge. I mean, I think my beard is gray now because of that, and you know, I am losing some hair. And
I think
it was 21.
Was the hair loss?
No, you think it was prior to that?
Yeah.
It was the frosted tips?
Yeah, I saw that, 17, 18-year-old okay. photo on your door the other day?
I tried to.
Yesterday for your birthday?
And, you know, with COVID, I would mention the one thing we did do as a department during COVID when we were in lockdown, you know, we were locked down for 2 months. We didn't just sit at home and pretend to work. We actually became very strategic with that time that we had. John and I had a conversation. I was like, let's do some of the things we've talked about that we've been talking about for years, but we just don't have the time to do it because you're so busy during the school year that you don't have time to pull a committee together. And in the summer, our coaches, there's vacations, our coaches are recruiting. So the availability of people in the summer isn't conducive to have a cohesive committee. And so we set up committees and we were able to strategically chip away at certain things that we wanted to do that was going to benefit the department. And they have one of them being the academic success program. And then probably the second one being SAC, our Student Athlete Advisory Committee, and then the Wildcat Cup that goes with that. Those two things were done over COVID. And I'm not sure that we would have gotten those things right the way we did if we didn't have that time to do it, and that we weren't very intentional with the time that we had without having to run the games all the time and recruit all the time because we just had time to think about those things.
Transitioning out of the office, we're going into game day.
Yeah. Let's go.
You have 10 years of game day experience.
Yeah.
What is the number one best experience that you've witnessed through Penn College Athletics?
Like a moment?
Yes.
A moment on the field or in competition. Oh, man. Well, this might be recency biased, but there's a moment, and you're part of this moment. I went to our wrestling team was at regionals at Lycoming in March. Was it March?
Yeah, first week of March.
March of this year. And I had a pass, so I was able to go behind the mats, and, you know, I was watching our guys wrestle. And Noah Hunt, who was the brother of Eric, was in a third, fourth place match. If he gets third, he goes to the NCAA tournament. If he gets fourth, not only does the season end, his career is over because he's a senior. And so he wins it. Noah, if you know him, is very quiet and a shy guy by nature. He doesn't sell it, you know, he's usually the big smile, little head bob, a little shoulder shake, and he gets off the mat. But he knew what the moment was, and, you know, he pointed at his teammates that were there cheering for him. Then he ran over and he jumped into your arms, and I was standing right behind you guys, and that moment gave me chills. So on the field, that's as a game day moment, that's one that that really jumps out at me. And I think maybe another one was in 21, our softball team, during COVID, with no fans in the stands, won the NEAC championship. It would have been NEAC at the time, at home, to be our first team sport to go to the NCAA tournament. Baseball had won a conference championship in 15, but we weren't eligible because we were still in provisional. Golf had just won a week before, but as a team sport, golf is more individual. As a team sport, that was the first team sport, so that was neat to see that.
Yeah, it was a cool moment, and I definitely appreciate, you know, you allow me to have that moment, especially being helping out with the wrestling program. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was probably the last time you hugged Noah.
Yeah, probably.
Poor guy, just wants a hug from his brother.
But, kind of wrapping this up, we're way over time, but, you know, you're pretty long-winded.
I am.
So, we got some questions from the coaches.
Let's go.
Number one, mm-hmm. What do you believe is the most important piece of advice from a young/aspiring coach, parentheses leader, to learn? And this one's from our men's lacrosse coach, Jordan Williams.
Shea Willie. Number one, expand your resources, and then two, utilize your resources. Get to know as many people as possible, and don't be afraid to ask them questions. No one can do it alone. You know, they always say it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village, and it takes great mentors to raise a good leader. And so, you know, really tap into those resources, and don't be afraid to ask questions.
If you were more brave, what would you do? And this one's from through Jordan from head basketball coach Brittany Money.
Yeah, if I was more brave, what would I do? Man, that's a great question. As I've gotten older, for some reason, I've got a slight fear of heights. If I go high on stuff, my knees knock a little bit, and that started happening a few years ago.
Your knees knock on the ground too, I heard.
No, that is a lie that some people have started about me putting and golf. My knees have never knocked, so I'm glad I'm able to address that publicly as well. Tyler, John, Chris. If I was more brave, I would probably do something in the air, like skydiving or running off a cliff with one of those big body kite suits. That always looks fun to do, but I can't even imagine stepping up and looking over a cliff like that.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know about jumping out of a plane, though, because you couldn't even shut the plane door.
That wasn't my job. That was your job.
So I
don't have the experience that you have of shutting a plane door. That is correct.
I'm technically a pilot.
Eric and I, just so everybody knows, took a terrifying flight from Williamsport to Dulles Airport to go to NCAA convention in a single prop plane in a six-seater with five people on it, and Eric was asked to lock the door behind him. So that was a fun experience.
Yeah. Very fun. I believe, this is one more. We had to get this one in.
Okay.
This is a little dig at your personal life.
Sure.
Dating an elite athlete who has accomplished so much in her career in comparison to your athletic career that is non-existent post-high school.
Yes.
How do you motivate yourself daily to keep up with her accomplishments?
That's a good question. So a little background. My girlfriend was a bit of an accomplished athlete. She had some success in college, a couple of national championships, small Americans, was able to represent her country and the international level, so has accomplished a lot. Me, not so much. And so how I'm able to feel good about that is sometimes I'll just toss her to the remote of the television, and if she drops it, I'll just be like, ugh. World-class athlete, okay. You know, things like that are completely unnecessary but are humorous in order for me to feel better. But quite honestly, at the end of the day, I'm very proud of what she's able to, what she achieved.
Question for me, you know, being with you for the past 2 years, seeing all the interactions that you have with the student-athletes, what is one lasting impact that these student-athletes have provided you?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think we're seeing it now. I mean, we're in the finals week right now. One of the best things we've been able to do in this department is have this space we have where our coaches have offices and their kids are coming in and out, and I'm fortunate where, you know, a lot of student-athletes have to walk by my office on their way to, you know, what their real destination is, which is their coach. But being able to talk with them and check in on them and ask them questions, how your class is going. Number one, I'm curious. I want to know those things, but I think they appreciate that. This week is bittersweet because you have people leaving that are going to return, just saying goodbye and, you know, have a good summer. But then there are people leaving for a final time. People, you know, that are graduating, you've known them since they were 18 years old. They're now 22, 23, and they're leaving. When you're in an admin role, you don't have the connection that a coach does. And so it's nice when a student-athlete invites you to their graduation party, or one of our former student-athletes, his family has a 4th of July party every year, you know, get invited to those things. My birthday was the other day. Former student-athletes texted and wrote things on my Facebook, wish me happy birthday. So you're always happy for those moments. I think it just reminds you of why you do it. You're doing it for, like I said before, you're doing it for your student-athlete experience. And when you can see the impact that you had on them, it's great. It's just really fun getting to know the students and seeing them grow from a teenager to an adult. I mean, they're going to be functioning members of society very soon, and for most of them, they're going to be just fine. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a good way to wrap up this episode of Wildcast. Thank you, Matt, for coming on.
Thank you.